You're listening to the Kumek Podcast, hosted by our teacher development team. Enjoy!
So, afternoon, James. I'm really, really delighted to have you on our Kumek Podcast today. Thank you for joining us. I'm going to get you to introduce yourself in a minute, but I just want to tell our listeners the reason I am thrilled to have you here. I came across you during the pandemic because I knew that you'd won two awards, the Princess Diana Award and the Dr. Abbas Khan Medal. And then I sort of started looking at all the work that you are doing as the African Caribbean student lead, lots of mentoring roles. You're an ambassador for sort of widening participation and access to medicine. You're on many advisory committees, including for Imperial College and the Lambeth Social Mobility Strategy Advisory Group. And you're the youngest school governor I have ever met. Now, I appreciate people can't see you, but when you introduce yourself, I think they will be able to figure that out. And I know I haven't even covered all your roles, but over the past year, I've really wanted to elevate certain student voices that I don't think are always so. Do you want to tell the listeners a bit about yourself and what drew you to medicine?
Well, thank you for the introduction, first of all. Those are, as you rightly said, some of my roles, and I enjoy all of them for different reasons, and I do all of them for different reasons. And we can definitely get into that later in the conversation. But I think for me, the first time I considered medicine as a career option was when I was, I think, 5 or 6 years old. It sounds very cliche. Well, when I was young, I wanted to be a doctor. I wanted to save the world. But that was actually me. For context, I grew up in Jamaica for the first 6 years of my life. And I had a really, really uncontrolled asthma when I was young. So it meant I was constantly in hospital. Every 2 months or so, I was getting rushed to hospital because of an asthma attack or because of some sort of complication with my asthma, whether that was pneumonia, chest infection, all these things. And I remember each time I'd go to hospital, after every visit, I would remember someone or I'd build a relationship with someone new. And I think feeling that comfortable within the hospital space and also just knowing that it was saving my life every single time I went to hospital made me appreciate what was happening. And I thought to myself as a 5-6-year-old, hey, I want to do this. I want to help other children like myself, and I want to be able to make people feel better. So from that moment, I decided I want to be a doctor. It changed from like a doctor pilot, a doctor policeman, a doctor fireman, but doctor was always in the mix. But I think more than that, maybe this explains why I do so much other extracurricular stuff. I had an appreciation for the fact that although it was the doctors and nurses and other healthcare professionals that would help me to feel better, I understood that without a car, without medication at home, without a nebulizer at home, I probably wouldn't be alive now. And I think that acute understanding and awareness, even from that young age, made me realize that it was a lot of social factors. And obviously, I couldn't articulate this at my young age, but I think as I got older, I was able to articulate that there's a lot of social factors that really, really play a part in how healthy people are and the quality of life that people can have. So for me, it's super, super important to take into consideration people's social circumstances and help to elevate people socially as well as do all the medical things that I do in my degree.
That's really astute that, you know, I would like to think that many doctors would have a similar story of kind of, you know, actually wanting to help people and knowing that this was their calling from a young age. Not all of them will have, like you, that sort of, you know, a health condition that really exposed them to medicine quite early and seeing what the healthcare system did. But I think that's quite unique, that sort of perspective. You know, even when you were quite young, that you couldn't articulate, there was far more than just what the doctors were doing that determined kind of health. Often some of this stuff comes from kind of within you. Some of it comes from your environment and surrounding. And I'm just wondering, was that something that was articulated in your family? Was that something that you discussed and got from kind of your surroundings? Or I'm just wondering where that, you know, wisdom kind of came from.
It was just an understanding that Jamaica is a, I don't know the word developing, but let's use the word developing country here. I think I was always aware that people didn't have things, like material things, or couldn't afford them, or people had to do without. And I lived in quite a rural part of Jamaica as well. So I think that was a little bit more evident. Even now, I'm not sure we still have fully stable internet in the place where I live in Jamaica. So I think that's kind of a measure of the things that we kind of do without and get along without. And so I understood that other people couldn't afford to have a nebulizer. Like my mum lived in England at the time, so she could afford to send me these things. Most people's parents couldn't afford to send me that stuff. So I knew that. But yeah, it wasn't really a conversation that I had with my family. I don't think I have any doctors in my immediate family, at least. So that wasn't a conversation to sort of emulate anybody else in my family. I do have a mother who's a nurse, so she would kind of come home and tell me stories about the hospital and being a nurse and the things that she had to do day to day. But I think the decision to become a doctor, particularly later when I was actually applying, was completely mine. My parents didn't know what university I was applying for. They didn't know how the process worked because they'd never gone through the process in England. So they couldn't really give me the help that I needed in application.
Yeah. And so it definitely sounds like you were kind of just aware of what was happening in your own environment and the kind of inequalities and the differences. And that was really clear to you. You were lucky in some senses, but that the system wasn't fair and wasn't working to everyone's advantage. And so thinking about kind of, as I say, you know, we've got so many students in our year, and you only came to my attention when I saw you'd won these kind of awards. I just think, God, what a shame that I'd never personally, or, you know, we'd never heard at QMEC of the work you'd been doing. So I know I mentioned just some of your roles, but I just wonder whether you could tell us a bit about how your journey into kind of medicine kind of developed, including all these other roles that you have, and kind of the reasons for doing all this other stuff as well as carrying on with, you know, completing your medical degree.
I'll try and keep it short and snappy because it is a long and tumultuous or convoluted journey. As I was growing up, I wanted to be a doctor. I came into King's through the Extended Medical Degree Program and very happy to sort of be at King's. I knew how good it was as a university. I knew that this was a good course. But I think I was also acutely aware that there just weren't that many black people. Went into the lecture theatre, about 400 people, looked around and I saw immediately, I only saw one other black boy. And we literally locked eyes. It was as if like, oh, you're here too. And it was just that moment of, oh, okay, I'm not kind of doing this by myself. And we both remember that moment, which is, I think, is really funny. And we talk about it every time we see each other. But I think more than that, I was involved at ACS. So I had a community of black people, but I was acutely aware that there were not many Caribbean people. And that's something I'm still aware of in a lot of spaces that I end up in. So as much as I had a community of black people, there were very few Caribbean people. And a lot of the interventions that were happening at King's were very much like BAME focused, but they neglected the nuances within sort of BAME, and particularly within black, there was a problem as well, because there was disproportionate rates of acceptance and progression amongst African and Caribbean students. And I guess BAME and black, the differences were there. And even with attainment gap, you also see the differences within that too. Actually, even before I came to university, I took gap year. So I knew people who were already at uni, and I was slightly aware of some of the problems that I just alluded to. So I made a list, and the list had, I wanted to become ACS president. I wanted to increase the number of Caribbean students that go to rescue universities and King's. From early, I was very deliberate in the things I wanted to do at King's and the impact I wanted to make, because I understood how important it was for people like myself to kind of know about King's, know it's a place for them, and for me to help make it a place that is welcoming and a place they can thrive in. So my first encounter with this kind of work was wider participation. I applied to be an ambassador. I actually got rejected first, and I'll continue to tell this story. I got rejected at first, but luckily had a conversation with someone. I applied again, interviewed, and then got a place or a position as an ambassador. Did some work, WP as an ambassador. Then I wanted to do more. I wanted to get involved more with particularly things focused towards Caribbean students. So I became an intern in 2018, I think. Loved it. I was there for the whole summer. Did some stuff around strategy and specific things for black students, particularly low-income ones, and the sort of interventions that need to happen for them. And then the summer after, I wrote together a proposal as to why we needed a program specifically for African and Caribbean students from low-income backgrounds. And then now WP has a program specifically for African and Caribbean students from low-income backgrounds. That's the first program that's happened like this. But I think more than that as well, we're now including specific metrics for African and Caribbean, and particularly Caribbean students, within all the programs across Winding Participation. That specific measurable metric within the strategy and within the thing that they're externally accountable to. I think the name will come back to me. So those are sort of the roles that I do within King's, and some of the things I've done within King's as well. Also did a couple programs when I was president. I did the Queens at King's. It was a campaign to essentially highlight that there are loads of black women at King's doing exceptional things, and they should be recognised for that. Also did a Black Men at King's College London, which I took inspiration from the Cambridge one. Just again, highlight that there are black men here, and this is a space for young black men to come and thrive and study.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting, that feeling of sitting in that lecture theatre, thinking for quite some time until you locked eyes on, as you put it, you know, another black male medical student, that you weren't the only one, you know, and that you both noticed that at the same time, and just kind of acutely aware of what that might feel like, but also wondering, kind of, it's also making me think about during your time at medical school, has that sort of changed? Or, you know, kind of when you're in on placements, does that feel different at all? Or does that still feel the same? Do you still often feel like you're the only person? And then I'm also really interested in just thinking about this for medical educators, about how that real drive to make the environment a welcoming place for, you know, African Caribbean students, especially Caribbean students. And so I'm just wondering how we can do that.
In short, no, it doesn't feel any different. I think you just kind of get used to it. Been at King's for 6 years now. I understand how it works. And I think ultimately, I treat uni as that. It is a degree, I come to do it, and I leave. Because I've got so many other things to do that bring me like real... And this isn't saying that my degree doesn't bring me joy. Other things in my life really, really fulfill me as well. So my medicine isn't all of my life. So it means that if I just have to compromise or be in a space that I don't necessarily feel entirely comfortable in, I can do that for the sake of the degree. And also understanding that I want to be a part of that change. So that's okay. So I think it is changing. I think particularly in the younger years, I think there's more black students coming up. And it seems more and more that there's more push for kind of diversifying the student body, particularly medicine. And I guess for the second question about, educators making it more welcoming. Ultimately, I think it's very difficult. There were two things I noticed when I came to King's. First one was that black Caribbean. Second one, low socioeconomic background. And that for me was actually a much more of a shock than sort of being black. Because there's been in spaces before where I was a minority. So that was okay to a degree. But not having people that could really understand where I came from, and I would tell stories or explain things that happened in my life, and it was like, oh, what? That's crazy. I can't relate to that. And just having few people that you can relate to, and when you did find them, that was like a sense of relief to kind of feel understood from that perspective as well. So I think it's about having more students in the body. That is how you create a more welcoming environment, because I think that's a real indicator of the intention of the university to make it more diverse, is to have more people. As a result, you kind of gravitate towards people that you're most comfortable with. I think as well, that cultural competence, which I know that King's does a lot of, and just that understanding that as an educator, you may not be able to fully empathize, but it's about being in that space where you're willing to understand and ask sensible questions and engage in conversations to learn without sort of imposing yourselves and the thing that you think is correct.
I just think it's a real reminder, isn't it, of just the diversity that we have. And it's just taken me back to when, this was a long time ago, that I was at medical school, but I do remember sort of feeling kind of out of my depth. I'd gone to my local comprehensive school, and actually I just found friends that were from a similar background from me, or more similar, because actually I just thought they understood me in a way that maybe other people wouldn't. I can kind of relate that need to find people that maybe understand you, and the more diversity we have, I think that makes it a little bit easier in some ways.
Yeah.
Just wondered whether you want to say anything more, James, about the programme that you set up for low-income African Caribbean students. I was just wondering what that looked like, what that program was, or what it did, and whether there's things we can learn from that.
As I mentioned, I wrote a proposal in 2019. We were aware that the president at the time within ACS had set up a program for African and Caribbean students. So the kind of logical thing that we thought to do was to partner with the ACS and essentially resource the program that they did. So essentially we came together, brainstormed, added to the program, took away from the program, very much like streamlined it, but with the intention of just resourcing it so the ACS could sort of run it. So that's when I became the African and Caribbean student lead within the department. And that was kind of the thing that I oversaw, as well as more strategy stuff. So currently that looks like a 2-year program, 25 to 30 students. You take them throughout the A-levels and you essentially give them all the resources that they need, whether that's soft skills, whether that's extra tuition and masterclasses, help with personal statements, work experience. We give them as much as they can to make the application as best as possible to increase their chances of going to universities like King's. We're halfway through with the first cohort. They'll finish in 2022, and that's when they should be going to university and be recruiting for the next cohort, start of 2022, January.
And I take it it's not just medicine they're applying for, is it? Or no, it's more widely than that.
No.
But I guess it's just taking me back to what you said about when you were trying to apply for medicine and just not having anyone who'd been through the process or anyone who could say, this is what you need to do. And I guess that is sort of what your kind of part of the process for you is, helping people who were in a similar position to you actually kind of navigate what can be really tricky if you don't know what the system is actually looking for.
Definitely. I think I was fortunate. So I'm part of a charity called Amos Bursary. They were brilliant in terms of supporting me through my application. They gave me mentors. They helped me to find work experience. A lot of the things I had from Amos Bursary, I wouldn't even know where to start looking if I hadn't have had that support. So I understood how valuable that is. And I think just trying to get that to many young people as possible is so super important. The other things I kind of wanted to mention were all the things I do outside of King's. I guess it's more so for whoever's listening to understand that as a medical student, you can do other things. It is possible. It's just about really understanding why you're doing them and what it is you want to do from it. So for me, my long-term aim is to build things that are sustainable and scalable, that help the people that need it most. But as well as that, my solution needs to bring people choice and they need to feel joy from the things that I create or build. So as you mentioned at the start, I sit on advisory boards for BBC Children in Need. Actually, I'm not sure you mentioned that one, but I sit on the advisory board for BBC Children in Need for their Black Futures Fund. And what we're aiming to do is distribute 10 million over the next, I think, 10 years to Black communities to try and resource them as best as possible or give money to the organisations that are helping Black communities. Imperial, I sit on the Black Students Panel, and that's all about essentially finding solutions, whether that's programmes or bursaries or scholarships, to help to increase the number of Black students to go to Imperial, also improve the current, I guess, environment that Black students operate in. And lastly, sitting on the advisory board for the Lambeth Strategy, I think Educational Strategy, I can't remember the full name. That's all around making sure that the equitable outcomes for the young people within Lambeth. I also run a social enterprise called the Ladder Project, which is for students. And the aim of that is to holistically develop young people so that they have the skills they need after school to thrive. And we've been doing that for 2 years and it's been going really well. We've helped hundreds of students and we've been able to teach young people skills and grow confidence, I think more importantly, so that they feel like they can actually achieve the things that they want to. Those are the things I can do. I think.
I was going to say that really comes across quite clearly. You've got a really clear kind of aim and sort of vision. I think it is the fact that you kind of really enjoy these roles. Just interested in the work that you're doing with the students. What sort of skills are you sort of teaching them? And do you do that on your own or do you do that? Are there a group of you that do that?
So it's me and my co-founder, and we have a team of people that help us. And then we sometimes have facilitators that help us in the programs. But for us, we teach them public speaking, communication skills, entrepreneurship, because there's so much skills within like solution building. And we teach them about higher education. We teach them how to sort of learn and how to revise and what things to kind of do to prepare themselves for exams. And then we teach them about goal setting, which is super important as well. Like, I think oftentimes young people, they have like really big goals and really good goals. They just haven't put it in a smart way that's really going to help them to achieve it or make it more achievable. So we help them with that as well. And towards the end, we sort of do like a vision planning session, all forward looking, and help them to come up with some really clear goals and some really clear steps about how they're going to achieve those. Then they become a part of our Ladder Project community.
I just imagine with all the skills that you kind of give to them, they must be able to kind of give back in the same way that you do. And I can definitely hear how kind of solution focused you are and how passionate you are. And I think that will really, I'm sure that must come across to the students that you're working with and must be really sort of positive and empowering for them. So, you know, I think one of the things that's really clear to me is that you will be a role model for these students and help them to get to places, because you kind of have got the skills to support them to do that and to give them the confidence. Just incredible to hear all that work that you do. Thinking about your kind of journey in medicine, because you're a final year medical student, so you've been with us for a little while now. What's the journey been like for you and kind of what's your learning been as part of that process?
I think the first thing is you have to be adaptable. Things don't always go to plan. Things change all the time. Even with Corona, I think is a great example for everyone. You kind of have to be adaptable. You have to sort of work with time or the situation, what's happening. I've had placements all over London. I've had placements in Kent. And it's about understanding that that's kind of part of the training and part of the learning. Something that I wish I did more. I wish I found more of a community within medicine for things like, not just revision, but I think just support more generally and support with like different parts of applications and different opportunities, etc. I think that's such an important part of the medical journey, because you need people that are going through a similar situation that can really empathize and understand and support you in the way that you kind of need them to. So I think that's something I wish I'd done more. I'd also say that medicine is one of those things that I don't think you can kind of want to do it. You have to really want to do it, because if you don't, I think it's very difficult to motivate yourself, because it is long. It's a long degree. And I think it's hard because it's long and because you have to do multiple things at the same time every year. You'll have to do placement, you have to do tutorials, lectures, you might have to do dissection, and there's different moving parts all the time that you have to sort of balance. Plus, you're expected to have a social life and have like a good work-life balance, which I don't know what that is in medicine, but that time management is that being able to prioritize and constantly, I think, is the most difficult thing about medicine. I think ultimately as well, on the wards is so fulfilling. I always leave wards feeling so fulfilled, having helped, even if it's sometimes I've literally just made a cup of tea for a patient that I should really wanted a cup of tea. And I think if I'm able to do just a small thing for each of the patients I see, it's such a blessing.
Brilliant. Yeah, and I'm just really struck by how much you are sort of juggling and seem to just kind of be managing. And I just wonder if you have any clearly it's some of it is just you are really passionate about it and you make the time for it, but I just wonder if you have kind of advice for people on how to sort of juggle that, kind of how do you manage it, because you are doing so much.
A couple of things. I think the first one is clear boundaries. I'm very happy to say no to things. I say no to things all the time, and they kind of have to align with the things I want to do. If they don't, then I don't do them. I think secondly, I make time for things. So the mornings, for example, that's when like a lot of the deep work happens. So maybe if I'm doing medicine, I'll do all my lectures in the morning, so that in the afternoon, it's a lot of the more creative and the stuff that I don't have to think as hard about. I also have an accountability group. It isn't normal, but it's just two people in my life that keep me accountable every week. And we have goals every week, and we set them, and then we revise them, and then we make new goals, just to make sure that we're progressing in all parts of our life. And those are people who know the goals that I have, so they're aware of the long-term goals as well as the short-term ones, so they can help me find sight sometimes when I lose it off the sort of longer-term goals. I always say this to my friends, but I always do both. I always have fun, and I always do my work, because both are equally as important to me. I will never compensate on fun for medicine. I'll never compensate medicine for fun. I'll just do both 100%, because I'm young. I can now. When I'm no longer young, then I won't be able to, so I do that now.
I'm hoping you can still get the work-life balance when you're still a little bit older as well. But I think there's two things I'm struck by. One is, you know, and I've said it already, but I think, you know, that really clear vision and just being able to say no to things that don't align with that. I think that's really important. I think often people feel like they have to say yes to everything. So I think that's a really important message. And I think after listening to you today, I reckon everyone's going to find a couple of people and get their own accountability group. I love that idea. I'd quite like to leave with kind of a final message for our medical educators who are listening about what we can do as educators to support and empower specifically our sort of Black male medical students, our Caribbean students, as you've kind of, that's been your focus, if you've got any top tips.
I think the first one would be to be advocates for more Caribbean students, I guess. Do whatever you can, support the initiatives that help access, I think is the first thing, because you need more advocates in all parts of university to make that happen. I think secondly, it's just being open to learning and understanding, and just listening, being curious. I think ultimately, like, we all come with our own like experiences and our own sort of view on life. As sort of the minority, what I've had to do is learn and understand other people and then be able to sort of operate within kings. I think the opposite needs to happen as well, is that everyone needs to kind of understand each other. I think the beauty of uni is that you get so many different people from so many different places. And actually, if you feel like your educator is interested in you and the things that you care about and the places you come from, automatically you feel more comfortable, because you feel like you are a integral and important part of that session or learning. And I think that's important. Even a lot of the things about, it's been happening over the last year about racism in medicine, or the fact that there's disparities, which everyone's kind of known for a while, but I'm just glad it's kind of come to the forefront of conversations now. I could probably count how many Black lecturers I had within the first few years of my medical degree. I think since I've become more clinical, it's really increased. And I had a really, really good, I really hope he hears this, but I had a really good mental health tutor. Like he was a tutorial leader. And he was amazing. And I remember just always wanting to go because I just felt so comfortable with him. And I think that's the kind of first time I appreciated how important it was for me in particular to have just a black man teach me. So yeah, I think that's important too.
I agree with you. I think there is, feels really important that this is a kind of moment in time where, you know, we're having conversations a bit more honestly and openly about kind of things like racism and how representation really matters. And I think there's a real, I feel like there has been a shift and we've got, you know, kind of more allies and advocates. And so I really hope they will hear your message today as well, James, and so that, you know, we can kind of work on this together. But thank you again for taking time out to talk to me today. It's been really nice to hear a bit about your journey and all your amazing work, but also all the kind of little techniques that you do to kind of keep yourself accountable and on track and doing the things that are important to you. Thank you so much, James.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
No problem at all.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. Tweet at us at @KumekForKCL. Thank you for listening. See you next time.